Hello everybody. As you can see, there's a delay in getting tea and coffee or something.
So we can get coffee. And then what we can do is people can make their way. We're not going to stop meeting. To just get some tea and coffee. Welcome to Dr. Dennis Davis and his team. Judge, I've been trying for some while to get you to come. Obviously, not on your side, but there's been any lack of cooperation. Nkomo is fine, obviously. It's fine. You know, it's just that we have to slot it into an otherwise very busy agenda. The norm in our country is to call people by their first names, except if you're elderly or you're a judge. And now in this case you are both, so it's doubly challenging for the, we're quite traumatized, we don't know how to manage this. Obviously as traditional leader, we can't go by first name. Although I must tell you, given that I've been in Parliament for 21 years, and chairing committees for 13, Judge, they have yet to call me Baba Chairperson. They all call me Chairperson. So I would like you to rule on that before the end of the meeting. But having said that, welcome. We were pleased to see that you did report, or at least brief, the Trade and Industry Committee. In fact, what you said is part of a report on, primary focus on transference pricing, as we call it. Various committees in this parliament, mainly, of course, trade and industry, minerals and ourselves, are preoccupied with that. And only last week, the cross commissioner was here to tell us that 24 new people have been appointed, you might have seen in Business Day Page 1, here last week, to handle this matter. And, of course, we accept that it's a long way to go before we can stem the tide of money flowing out of our country and continent, in fact, as you know. So welcome. Over to you. We kept it open. Because we want to know what you're doing. There's always another report was released this last week, and comments have been invited. At least that's how it appears in the Business Day, that public comment was invited on the report. Now, if that's accurate or not, we don't know, but you'll tell us. So we would like to speak for 45 minutes or so. I think you've been told by the committee secretary. And we sit normally to one, but myself, I'll go away like 20 past 12. So the way is interesting, I'll just remind you, there's a circular island you can see around. It's this launch of this budget guide, which has been sent to members, as well as the invitations. It's at 12:30 at Spin Street on the corner. It's about a minute and a half walk. You go down towards Parliament Street first, right? The Milk and Honey is, I think, the building just before this. If you want to come, you're more than welcome. The main speaker there is something called Len Verwey. He's written the guide. Myself, I'm just offering a few inane words. There's nothing you'll miss me. But if you want to come, you might want to be there in time for it. It starts at 12:30, I think there's some lunch provided, I'm not sure, and it will be over by 2. Obviously, it's at 3 today, right, yes? Yeah. So if you can come, please. Okay, you can pass this around when you have some time. Over to you, Josh, and you'll introduce a colleague who's going to introduce herself.
Thank you very much. Professor Ingrid Woolard is my colleague. Two of us are both from the committee. Can I just make one clarity? Well, firstly, thank you for inviting us. It's certainly not true. Well, certainly correct, as you said. It's not our, on our side. We're very welcome to come any time. In fact, I wasn't quite sure how it all works between your various subcommittees, and I was somewhat surprised to be issued an invite to trade and industry, and not by finance. In fact, I told them so, but they seemed perfectly wanting to hear what they said. No, no, I don't want to get involved in your parliamentary details. I suspect it may not be the last time we see each other for all sorts of reasons, and some of them will come to. Secondly, Chair, can I just make a clarification? I did ask that I be excused the talk because I have to go to Johannesburg for another meeting. So thank you. Of course. I'll excuse myself just before 12. Thank you very much. So what we thought we would do to start with was just to give you some introduction about our committee and what it is that we have been up to. As you will know, we were established on the 17th of July 2013 by then Minister of Finance, Mr. Gordon. We really only started work about a month thereafter because of all the various delays before we got going. I think it's important to note that we have 8 members, 2 ex officio members from the one from Tejrin, and one from Fars, who's here. It's good, you know, we're very indebted to him, as Marcus said, for more than from the Treasury. I think it's important to note as well up front that all of our members are part-timers, which, including myself, which has made means that, unlike some of the missions which are full-time, we've been doing this work in a part-time capacity, which means we've relied to a large degree, many areas, on ad hoc members that we've brought in. As we speak, I have actually written to the Minister to expand our complement by two further members. We have a secretariat, two full-time, one part-time, and all of our details are on that website. And I'm going to make reference to various reports, all of which you can download from our web page. The mandate was extraordinarily broad. In principle, to inquire into the role of the tax system and the promotion of inclusive economic growth, employment creation, development, fiscal sustainability. It clearly was supposed to be a report that we're going to generate, which was to be developed through the prism of the National Development Plan. That was the sort of backdrop to what we were asked to do. It's true, though, that when you look at that, it's extraordinarily broad, and our mandate, therefore, is to literally range on every single aspect of tax policy. It is important in this regard, I can say one thing by way of by introduction. This is the first inquiry we've had into the tax system for 20 years. I myself was on the Tax Commission, which explored tax policy just after democracy dawned in South Africa. And that, too, is a point I want to come back to, if I may, but I wanted to emphasize this, because what we now are in the position of having to do is to look at tax policy 20 years into democracy, with the loss of the National Development Plan, with the current economic situation which confronts us, and, well, with the benefit of being able to test whether what CAFs, those of us who are CAFs recommended, really still have traction in the 21st century for all sorts of reasons. It's important also to note that we are a committee, we are not a commission inquiry. And why that's important, members, is this, that we can't just release our reports. If we were a commission inquiry, my understanding is, as it was under the CAT Commission, we released reports to the public because we were somewhat more independent. It's not as if the minister, for example, felt that was due to the country. It's been very helpful about the previous minister and the present minister, Minister Nene, grateful to them for all their assistance. But it's definitely this, that what occurs is we produce a report, we then hand it to the Minister of Finance, and we request that the Minister of Finance make that public. And to a very, in fact, without exception, ministers have done that. But I just want to let you know that that's the way in which we actually operate. If you look at the progress that we've, this gives you some sense of the way we've worked. We've divided our work up into subcommittees, and these are the subcommittees that have, in a sense, been constituted since we began, and I will speak through each and every one of them briefly. But you can see we started with small and medium enterprises. That was our first, and I'll come back to that. Base erosion and profit shifting, which causes creating all sorts of interest, is the second. A macro analysis. We wanted, which had not been done before, certainly wasn't done under CAS, and to best of my knowledge was not done under the Margate Commission, which was the one that was under the previous regime, was to actually look at tax policy in a broad macroeconomic sense and kind of locate it so that we could actually get some guidelines as to how tax policy should be framed over the next couple of decades. That report, in the state duty, which of course has relationships to capital gain tax, a mining report. Again, I'll come back to that in a moment. Then there are, and if I could say 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, which I'll deal with a little later, but those are all in. And those particular reports you'll be able to see on our website. The mining tax report, literally, I'm hopeful that next week we will finalize, send off to the minister, and that will be available for comment later, shortly thereafter. Carbon tax is something which was not directly one of the issues that was on our remit, but it perfectly occurred to us, and I'll come back to that, that bearing in mind our broader framing of tax policy, it's important to actually look at carbon taxes in our broader analysis, and we have dealt with that, and we will obviously, that's why I suspect we'll be in front of you again, because when the carbon tax is debated before your subcommittee, I suspect we will have produced a report for your consideration, and we will certainly be back to talk to you about that, and we want to talk to you about that when that occurs. Public benefit organisation, the whole question of what used to be called the charitable, ecclesiastical, and educational sector. We examine the cats. It's an issue that we should look at again, and that's a subcommittee. Tax administration, I'll come back to that. Funding of government programs, and the whole issue of retirement savings. That's both. Now, if I could just say this, in each of these, obviously when you've only got 8 people, all of us who are part-time, we have relied hugely on finding people in the broader South African tax, economic, in case of NGOs, public benefit, or any of these other areas, people who are interested and know about the field, we've drawn them in to the subcommittees because otherwise we've never been able to function. So that's the subcommittee. I've already indicated that there are 5 reports that have already been tabled. There they are. As I understand, first 3 are on our available public comment. The VAT and the estate will shortly be available, very shortly. And what we try to do with these particular reports is to get public comment. We want to encourage people to engage with us. And then, in the light of these feedback, we then go along and will ultimately tweak those reports so that the minister will get final reports for the benefit of that particular feedback. And I suspect that some of these will provide quite a lot of public comment. As I indicated, the mining report will come in July 2015. I'm not at liberty to say what's in that yet because I think instead I've got to finalise it next week and then hand it to the minister, and then I'm perfectly sure that given the importance of mining to the economy, you probably want to hear from us again. We did do quite a lot of work, I should tell you, on advising the minister on revenue raising initiatives for 2050 national budget. Members will recall that the Minister of Finance in last year, in the medium-term budget speech, had indicated that he was looking for somewhere in the region of about 15 billion rand of additional tax. And we, I think, quite a lot of work, our committee, I'm very grateful to them for the work that they did, which gave the minister some indication, not suggesting that he followed us at all, but I think we did make a contribution towards the deliberations, which the Treasury obviously took on board and in the budget. And you'll see we've had 112 meetings to date. We've had 139 submissions from various people. We've had 23 sets of comments received on the SME and the DEPS report. What we've done, and consistently done, is to invite people to come to speak with us. And we will continue to do so. And certain political parties have asked to meet with us. We've tried to meet with everybody that we can. So you can see that we've been pretty active over the less than 2 years that we've been in operation. Then, if I can just turn briefly to various reports that we have so that I can elucidate things for you. The SME report was quite clearly important. I mean, but the National Development Plan, everybody else is saying small and medium-sized businesses are really critical here. I should say that when we began, that there was no department of small and medium-sized businesses. Minister Zulu had not started. That point came after we had really got going. And we have, therefore, thereafter had meetings with him. I hope we'll continue to do so, because obviously they are clearly important in the deliberation. The interim report which we submitted, the first we ever did, was on 20 January 2014. The minister did accept 2 of our recommendations. They were accepted. There was, of course, quite a lot of debate about that as to whether, in fact, the idea of a compliance rebate, meaning that if we took the money at present, which was the sense and allowance given to small and medium-sized businesses, and
converted that into some idea that we could encourage compliance of small and medium-sized businesses with tax. That was the way to go. It elicited a lot of criticism and critique. I remain unconvinced that much of that is valid. One of the problems I've learned over my almost 2 years in this job, I should have known this from my time on the Tax Commission, is you always deal in this case with huge vested interests, which dress up as principial arguments for nothing more than in fact trying to keep their vested interests intact. And it's extremely difficult, often, and some of them are very well funded, and they're good advocates for their causes, and someone has to deal with that. You know that probably better than I say. But I thought I'd make that public because it's a frustration that I've had for a long time. Yeah. Well, it's not that you don't have more weight than me, I mean, but the fact of the matter is, I didn't get it off my head. And thank you as well in relation to this, that one of the things, and I say this in general, that I thought we could do, and I meet with everybody who wants to meet with us. I'm quite determined that by the time we finish, and I'll come to that in a moment, or presently, that we can actually conduct, as best we can, a debate about tax policy, which is owned by everybody, which is because we're all in this boat together as citizens. And one of the things I've been trying to do is to have a rational policy discussion if we can. And so the subcommittee, which is, went back, been thinking about matters. We got comments. We're considering these comments. We're liaising with the Ministry of Small Business. We'll be coming back with a further report. I should also say that one of the difficulties we've had in this particular regard is extraordinary lack of information in this country about small businesses. It's quite astounding how little empirical data there is to work with. So that, in fact, everybody starts shouting from the rooftops. Nobody's really talking from a sense of, well, what in fact does the sector do and how can you influence this, that, and other? Very important. So we're trying to get as much information as we can in formulating a further small business report. The next report that we did was, of course, state erosion and profit shifting. Now, this is a truly controversial area for all sorts of reasons, so let me say a few things about it. What we did was to align our work with the 15-point action plan at OECD, but obviously from a South African perspective. You can see from the slide there that we produced the following report to the minister. I mean, these things run into 500-600 pages. I mean, we're talking about a massive document that my colleague, Professor Gutu, who was chair of this, done an extraordinary job together with a whole range of experts on international tax in producing that said interim document. They were released for public comment on the 23rd of December. We've had 10 sets of comments, probably have more, and we're updating that, and then we've got to actually then take a second set of action plans and do a report on that. So let me just talk a little about this issue. Again, this is an issue where there's a lot of public comment, all sorts of people are very keen about base erosion and profit shifting. And they're right to be, because to a considerable extent, we know, not just South Africa, but we know worldwide, that there's a significant problem about multinational corporations actually utilizing low tax jurisdictions or tax havens and the utilization of double tax treaties to reduce their tax. One of the benefits that I've had as chair of this commission is to talk to tax authorities in other parts of the world. And I can assure you that the Australians, the US, the English, are extremely concerned about this particular issue as well. I found it really significant just the other day. I spoke to the UK, so I knew about this. I found it quite interesting that during the UK election campaign, Mr. Cameron, who of course is not known as a leader of a party that's particularly interested in taxing the rich, if I could put it this way. But when he was asked, this was a significant point, when he was asked, how are you going to fund the issues of the deficit that you've got, bearing in mind that you're going to prune social services and all that as well, you've got to find some sort of tax money. Mr. Cameron said, there's at least £5 billion out there in tax havens that we're going to collect. And I found it really interesting that the UK, notwithstanding the Conservative Party's particular economic philosophy, were still very concerned about how they could actually close their deficit because of abuses. I say that because clearly that is an issue which must concern all countries, including ours. The problem that we face is all sorts of wild speculation as to how much money is out there. I tell you that I have studied very carefully, as have my colleagues, various reports of NGOs, there are a whole range of them, I'm not going to mention each by name, a whole range of them who claim that the astronomical sums of money simply waiting to be plucked off the fiscal fee and dumped into a little piggy bank, and you know, and it's so easy to do. Those, when you study those carefully, they are speculative. We do not actually know how much the hemorrhaging is. That there is hemorrhaging, nonsense. Many people, and I said this to your colleagues in the Trade and Industry Committee, many people within the tax committee have told me that the biggest problems are not necessarily, oddly enough, for the major multinationals, because they now are being subject to regulatory scrutiny all over the world. It's the tier slightly below who do cross border, but they rank below. There's a lot of funny games going on. I'm delighted that the commissioner has indicated that 24 more people are going to be added to the transfer pricing unit. I think that's a splendid idea, and I think he should be congratulated for moving so quickly on that, because that, of course, is our own view. We are going to continue to examine this. We've already made recommendations to the minister as to that there should be further disclosure in tax form. We want to know, for example, that if you have companies in your group which are located in low tax jurisdictions or tax havens, what are they doing there? What justifications do you have? One of the crucial questions that you've got to be able to do, which foster our recommendations, Chair, is if the revenue gets better information, they can in fact act much more efficaciously than otherwise would be the case. And so that's what we've been trying to do. How do you do that? I think that this is an area where many countries, no matter what their economic philosophies are, have indicated through reference to Mr. Cameron, are concerned about this because they're running deficits, and clearly we've got to deal with that. And we are. We're fine-tuning our reports in order perhaps to give some more guidance to revenue in this particular regard. It's obvious, as I say, that there is a problem here. I do not want to speculate about how much the money is, because I don't really know, and quite frankly, neither do these reports that I keep on being confronted with give me any further indication thereof. I also want to say one other thing, if I may, which is kind of related to this, but not entirely so. Of course, in addition to the issue of corporates who use various techniques to ensure that we don't get our fair share of tax, there is, of course, also the issue of individuals, high-net-worth individuals, for years, who have been abusing our system. You know, there's quite a considerable sum of money came in from the last amnesty we had, which indicated that there was a problem here. I myself am fascinated by how much large, high-net-worth individual money may be located in low-tax jurisdictions, including, for example, Mauritius. I know that there are South African banks who operate there. I'm not sure that we shouldn't be thinking similarly along the lines of FATCA, which is the U.S. The U.S. can start asking our banks about what residents of the United States, citizens of the United States, hold in our banks. I'm not sure we shouldn't be asking questions as well. This is an issue that we need to debate about, we need to discuss. I don't want to be alarmist about it, but I do feel strongly that this is an issue we're going to be thinking through. People have to pay their fair share. It's as simple as that. And those are issues which do concern us greatly, and we will be liaising with the SARS about that in the future, and also about what further steps can be taken. Perhaps this is the appropriate moment to say something more generally, Chair, about tax morality. You see, when you start getting corporations and individuals who are doing what I've suggested is being done, the question then arises, what is the tax morality of our country? And that's an important question that we've got to ask ourselves, because quite frankly, we run deficits which really are high. We know well that we've got to bring them within limitations, otherwise we've got dangers of being downgraded by rating agencies. That's not to suggest I'm a great advocate of rating agencies, but I'm not going to go into my complaints about them. All I'm going to say is that capital relief is an important question. And there are two components that I want to emphasize. The one is that people must pay their fair share. The other, which is particularly important, is that in order for them to pay their fair share, it is true that I am confronted consistently with the question of corruption. And I'm sorry to raise this, but I have to. I should tell you that every time I give a speech, and if we had 130 sessions, I must have given about 300 speeches over the last 2 years to every group who wishes to hear me on this, because that's part of my job. And I can tell you, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't even have to say, the first question that's always asked to me is, we would pay more tax if there were better privacy, i.e. if there was less corruption. And we've got to worry about these two questions. We cannot, and it's not just about e-tolling. In fact, I should tell you, in relation to this regard, that I think that part of the reason I was saddled with this job was because when I spoke with the previous Minister of Finance, as I did from time to time, he wanted to ask me some questions because I've been in the tech game for so long. At the time of e-tolling, I said to him, I don't think this is just about e-tolling. I think that we've got to worry about tax morality and encourage a culture of payment, but that culture of payment has to be accompanied by a culture of probity in relation to expenditure. And so he said, well, you take charge of this commission, but the fact of the matter is, I did want to emphasize that, and I'm happy to talk with members about that presently. The macroeconomic subcommittee report, I think, is really important. I want to pay tribute to Professor Willard and his colleagues there. I'm a humble lawyer, so economists are basically speaking. I'm not trying to jump away from this content, but support them 100%, and I'm really reading and I've made my contributions, but this is a really important report, and I encourage everybody to read it, because what it gives you to a large degree is some sense of guidance as to where our tax policy should be located. And there are a number of important points that we need to consider when we do this. Is that if we consider about where to raise revenue, where does one raise it? And you'll read in that report the difficulties about if you're going to increase that, what the consequences are. Now, it's not just the question of the potential retrogressivity thereof, it's also the question of what effect it has on inflation, what effect does it have on growth, and how does one operate within that framework. It also gives you some guidance, if I could just emphasize as well, as to the limitations that we have in relation to raising of taxes, of income taxes. Just to give you some clue, the interesting thing is that if we had decided to raise our income tax from 40 to 45% maximum marginal rate, of course we raised it to 41, but if we raised, say, 45%, and from round about, say, 1.2, 1.3 million rand upwards, which is a fairly reasonable sum of money, we would have only gathered in roughly another 3.5 billion. That's not very much when you think about the fact the minister was looking for 15. We need to understand something here, which is that we inherited, it's not anybody in the world, certainly not, I suspect, right of our faults, it's a legacy from apartheid. What we inherited was such a skewed distribution of wealth, so outrageously, egregiously unfair, that in a sense it also created limitations for us, because it's like a pyramid, so that you know, at the top there are not that many people, so even if you tax them at a higher rate, you don't get past as much money as you think you do. So look what we had to do. We had to go down the ranks to actually raise the 1% in order to assist, together with the fuel levy, to get the minister the 15 billion so that the books could be balanced in the way that he sought to do in a prudent fashion for this budget, for which he should be congratulated. But the simple point I'm making is there are structural limitations. Now, those structural limitations, which you will be able to read luminously set out in the macroeconomic report to raise, we've come back to my earlier point about base erosion and profit shifting, and particularly with regard to high net worth individuals who have trusts offshore and pretend that it's not really theirs because they have creative ways through letters of wishes, etc., of holding their money. But it just shows you that, number one, we need to do something about that. But number two, we need to bear in mind that when we craft our tax policy to ensure that we've got enough expenditure for what we need to be. And it's important to emphasize this, that one of the things that we have, I think, successfully found out, again, I know that Professor Woodard, you can ask her, I'm not more an expert than me, but the World Bank report indicated quite significant significant interest in this, that by virtue of the fact of our tax and transfer system, effectively the way we tax and the way we provision for social wage, if I could put it that way, we've brought the Gini coefficient down from what, around about 7, 8 to 5, 9. Still quite so high, I might add. I don't find that acceptable, and neither should you. But it is extraordinary that it is the most effective form of tax and transfer system available in the world in terms of the countries that the World Bank has examined. And what is interesting about that is that I always thought Brazil was the best. Everybody always told me, Brazil is the place you should be like Brazil. And it turned out that we're better than Brazil. And sometimes I think we should give ourselves a pat over the back and say, we're doing things really well. But think of the danger that if you get a corrupt tax morality and you start having erosion of money, just think what then happens, that if you cannot in fact reduce this tax and transfer system, how much greater social instability could occur in this country. It buys us time to restructure our economy, to improve employment, and in fact give a dignified life to all. But it's very important that in the short term, it's doing a major role, and it's an important role, and it really is a backdrop to much of, when you read the macroeconomic report, our report, you realize where the parameters lie, where the dangers are, where the pressure points are. I'm just highlighting a few of those issues, but I do recommend that you have a look at it in full, and we'd be very happy to come talk to you about that on its own. It's deserving of a session of its own. So that health committee report is basically in final editing stages. It will be available for public comment in July this year, that I'm sure. It is again a report that I'm sure is going to create quite lots of debate. What we try to do is to look at that holistically, what's its role? What kind of structure should we have for that? After all, we've got a very efficient VAT system. I should say one thing is that we know that because we had a serious study done for us. Was this IMF? IMF, I always mistake them. So the IMF did a study for us, thank you. What they were looking at was to look at the effective rate of VAT as opposed to novel VAT. So in other words, like how much of 14% do we actually get? Do we get 8%, 9%, 10%? What's the gap between the nominal rate of that and what we actually collect? And amazingly, I was disappointed in this that we were so good. I'll tell you why I was disappointed. Because I thought, gee, if we weren't so good, I could plug the gaps and there I could find more money. But there isn't more money because the VAT system is unbelievably efficient. Maybe even they're running the most efficient VAT system of all. It's incredibly efficient. And so that also should tell you something. You don't change something that isn't broken. And ours, far from being broken, is actually working exceptionally well. But the report goes into that. There are the technical questions that we've actually had to address in that subcommittee. We were, again, as in so many other areas, incredibly advantaged by having some of the finest people in the country who work with that, working with us in this regard. And that report will be out in July again, and we would be more than happy once it's out and once you've looked at it to debate that with you. The State Duty Subcommittee has met. It's also it's read its report. The final edits are being completed. It'll clearly be available for public comment in August 2015. Let me make one or two points about this. We don't have a wealth tax. We've got capital gains tax, but we don't have a wealth tax. We don't have an annual wealth tax. And we had to think about, well, what do we do in a country with a genius care efficient of the kind that we have and with the imbalances of the world? And one of the things that quickly Noah can just explain to you better than I'm not quite sure I can, is why we have such a small group. I think we've got too small a group of people paying 3, 4, 5 million rand. You know, sometimes I joke and think there are more people in the Johannesburg bar earning that than seem to be actually on the list. But I mean, what I'm seriously saying is, it's possible that because of capital gains and dividends, etc., that people with vastly greater amounts of income, if you could define that colloquially, are there than actually are paying taxes at rate. So the question is, what kind of wealth tax should we have? Well, that's complicated to have a wealth tax and start afresh. So one of the things that we sought to do is to actually say we don't have an estate duty. And maybe that particular estate duty actually can be taken more seriously than it is and raise more. It may never raise billions, but there's a principle of tax called equity. It's profoundly unfair to ask people earning a couple of hundred thousand rands a year to pay an additional 1% on their income tax, and to say to extremely wealthy people, we're not really worried about estate duty. You hand over everything to your children and grandchildren and don't have to pay anything. I mean, it seems to me that was what was a principle that seemed to be egregiously wrong, and that was why we have set this all out in our estate duty report. I should also say, there's a lot of nonsense spoken among some people, not all, in this area, that actually, capital gains and estate duty are the same. They're not the same. Capital gains tax is actually deferred income. Estate duty is much more proximate to a wealth tax. And frankly, we set that up, and we look forward to... I have no doubt that some of the constituencies to which I've alluded earlier will have lots to say about this. And will tell me that if we have these taxes, people will emigrate. Well, then go to some of the countries where they do have these issues and where their tax authorities, no disrespectfulness below, are a lot more fierce than ours in relation to tax avoidance. You can ask some people who've really been on our law reports with regard to Australian tax authorities precisely. So that report's coming out quite soon, and I'm looking very forward to seeing what the reaction is going to be in this regard. The mining tax is manifestly an exceptionally sensitive area, and we have tried our very, very best to invite everybody to come and talk to us. Some people have, some people haven't. But I can tell you, those who complain that they haven't had an input into our interim report, it was only because they have not taken up our invitation. Everybody was invited because we wanted to draw from the union movement to the mine houses. Some have not, I'm not going to mention names, have unfortunately been remiss in this regard. I'm not going to say more about it now. It would be unfair for me to do so because the list hasn't even seen our report. It seems to me that it's only fair for him to say this. But I can tell you that, as I said, indicated on the 18th, which is next week, full committee will meet. I know that this morning I was supposed to be in subcommittee, but I think this is more important for me to be here. But they are meeting today to tinker with the final draft, which the committee as a whole will see next week. And once we've done that, it'll be off to the minister, and hopefully he will release it for public comment. Then we've sort of started these various subcommittees. I've indicated to you, I'm not going to go more than, I will just say this. The thing that caused more interest than any other, I think I'd say, was our fair contradiction of the carbon tax. We've been overwhelmed. I deeply regret on one level that we poked on those issues, but I think we had to. I think we have to, despite what Mr. Mamoni has, as we say, he's from Treasury, I know he's baby, but it does seem to me that we have to, because we have a test, we have to test and give you the guidance of our views as to how this fits in with the broader architecture. I don't need to be persuaded in relation to this particular issue that environment is a vital question. Our question isn't in fact about the environment. Our question was to see, well, what extent was the carbon tax going to fit in with the broader a tax policy framework that we had developed, and that's why we called for submission. And again, I'll just say one other thing about this. Past the days of oral submissions, and again, I'm extremely grateful to Ingrid Woodard because she carried a very heavy onus in this particular regard of listening to all these people. I'm sure she can eloquently speak for herself, but I can say, having been near these, one of the difficulties they have is that you get such particular views, parochial views on all sides of the fence. So it's extremely often the puzzle out where the truth lies. I often think people think, there's one thing about this business that I think people think one's very stupid. So they come and tell us the extraordinary stories and you think, but that can't possibly be. But they tell it to you with such earnestness that you've then got to say, well, thank goodness I'm getting the other side and somewhere along the line I can hustle it up. But we will be back to you because we're going to be drafting our own report and we will hope that that will make some contribution to the deliberations that doubtless we'll have in the subcommittee presently. The public benefit organisations, we just started that. Tax administration, manifestly is an issue we have to deal with. We are not interested in some of the well-publicised questions that have been taking place in France. That's not our job. Our job is a broader job. Our job is to say to ourselves, did the model that some of us worked so hard to formulate during the CAP Commission's amongst the CAP Commission's recommendations, does that model still hold good? Where should there be alterations? Where are there pressure points in relation to, and I've been inundated with meetings and complaints and all sorts of grievances. And of course, having been in this area of tax myself until I became a judge for many years of my life, I'm well aware that there will always be tension between the tax paying community and the commission's office. The question is to try to find out how can one get a system that works as efficiently as possible, and I'm not suggesting for one moment that it isn't. It's perfectly obvious if you look at the amount of revenue collected, including this year where they did more than we expected, that the office works very well. The question is, where are there things that could be improved, and so we are interested in that. And of course, the Tax Administration Act has created its own challenges, and we'd like to look at that. I am meeting with the SARS Commissioner in late July, talk to him further about this and it's an ongoing issue because we want to work in collaboration with the Commissioner and his team and just assist where we can. We're just about starting a situation of funding of government programs, particularly important in relation to the National Health Insurance. How is that going to be funded? The whole issue of e-tolling clearly raised questions of the funding of government programs that we think we can make a contribution to. And finally, retirement savings, a perennial question which we didn't deal with properly in the tax, which we have to deal with. Can we actually do something about our tax environment that encourages savings in general, and how do we deal with the broader issues of retirement? Very, very important question. All I'm saying is it's an issue which we're kicking off, and we'll take some time on that. I think I've already indicated in relation to consultation that we hold meetings with everybody. I can say to members that if any political party or political party wish to meet with us, we're very happy to do so. We have met from all of these various organizations. We've constantly spoken to all sorts of people, from the trade union movements to business to NGO sectors, to universities, to a whole range of groups. And we want to continue to do so. We encourage solutions by way of whatever way we can get them. We want the best we can to ensure that when our reports come in, we get more feedback, and then we will finalize each of these reports shortly thereafter, but they will have the benefit of the kind of feedback that I think we're trying to encourage. I should also tell you that there are three reports that we've had by and large through the work of the IMF and the World Bank. There is a sector study of effective tax burden and effectiveness of investment incentives. One of the issues that we've still got to deal with is corporate tax as a whole. And the question of tax incentives becomes very important. Which ones work and which ones don't work? I think with the Tax Commission, one of the problems we have then was that the kind of Washington consensus was such a powerful discourse that the idea was no tax incentives and just low tax rates. And one of the problems that then occurred was he kept a whole lot of the incentives that had been there from the apartheid era. And what we've changed there is we didn't really look holistically, and we didn't really have kind of, if I could call it, econometric analysis which could really tell us which incentives were working and what is good for investment and what is not good for investment in terms of the priorities that we set under the National Development Plan. And that's why that report will be so important in this regard. I've already indicated the value and tax gap. with an extraordinary affirmation of our present system and of the work being done by SARS. And I can also tell you that the IMF benefited us enormously by doing a very comprehensive report on mining and petroleum, the whole issue which we're grappling with on mining tax. Although we didn't agree with everything that they said, certainly not, we were very grateful for that report. And those reports will be released at the same time as our reports are released, so you'll be able to see where we differed from them. And doubtless they'll definitely be where they think we are wrong, but there we are. Let me just then round up, Chair, with a couple of final points. Just give me 50 minutes and I'm almost there. No, I don't want to drone on. I'm much more interested in things. It's clear that the tax system won't solve all the problems in South Africa. People think that, if you could just do this for tax, then all of a sudden there'd be a 5% growth rate and all would be well. Well, that's not true. I do think it has a significant role to play. I think that it clearly is. And what we've been desperately trying to do is to craft our policies, all of the reports, with a view to how can we promote economic growth, employment creation, and ensure that in fact we do not run large deficits, and that we can actually behave in a fiscally prudent fashion. There's no doubt about it that my job, as I dare say your job in deliberating on these issues, would be a lot easier if it wasn't for the problems of low economic growth at present. I'm sure that it doesn't need any emphasis from me. Some of the factual questions, particularly electricity prices, it's extremely frustrating. Even if that electricity crisis actually is retarding our growth rate by 1%, which many economists tell me it is, if not by more, then it just indicates just how much additional strain it put on the revenue stream, which in turn then puts strain on our vital questions of tax and transfers, which I've illustrated. We have a complicated tax legislation system. I'm not happy about it. I've often joked that only a genius and idiot can understand our tax system, but many people can't. I regard myself as a normal person. I'm a judge. I've been a judge for 17 years. And I don't understand some of that. Now, I can tell you what that does is if it ever gets litigated, I'd love to see how it's going to be litigated. Because how those people are going to make sense of some of these sections, I do not know. So that's an issue in tax administration, which I'm coming to, and I've got a lot to say about it when we finally give our report. And then I've emphasized the point about the taxes being sent widely, the question of tax and morality. I've really emphasized that I need to know more. I also want to say that we're advisory. We make recommendations. The minister calls the shot at the end of the day. I accept that when he makes our reports public, he himself then opens himself up to the idea that, he can say, well, your committee said X, you say Y, but that's part of what I think a deliberate democratic culture is all about. We do want to continue having both government-led and business engaging with us. We hope that some of these reports that we hand down shortly for indicators will in fact mean further engagement. We're delighted to engage with this committee whenever it wishes to see us. There have been indicators, that we should expand our terms of reference. Well, quite frankly, I don't want to be like certain other commissions of inquiry, which seem to go on forever. In our case, I would hope that by the end of next year, we'll be done and dusted, which means we'll have just done over 3 years, and I think given the fact that I sat on the CAP Commission for almost 4 years, I think we'll have done well to get done by the end of 2016. That, of course, will depend to a large degree on what we've got to do in relation to feedback, but given the work program, I'm reasonably confident by the end of 2016, early 2017, all our reports will be in, and then, of course, the minister can take it from there. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity for addressing the committee.
Thank you very much. Sorry, do you want to add anything? No. Okay. David?
Thank you very much, and thank you for a brilliant presentation, Professor. We really appreciate that. Professor, you mentioned that in the federal budget, the shortfall in terms of additional tax required was 15 billion if my memory serves me right. And we've made several propositions, and I think my colleagues have to forgive me if I elaborate it all over again. We've made several submissions that we think, in terms of corruption and rate of expenditure, if you can offset that, the increases in tax revenue would be entirely unnecessary. And then we've seen the 1% increase in personal income tax. And then if I can just give you our view with regards to the 1% increase in personal income tax, the effect that it has. The maximum rate of personal income tax is now at 41% in the upper bracket, as you correctly said. And we're talking about tax morality. We'd like to keep the tax morality. Certainly we know that people should be taxed, but not overtaxed, and that's that we have to prevent that. Compared to other jurisdictions, it's higher than the majority of emerging economies, including Russia, 13%. Tax rate, Malaysia 26%, Brazil 27%, and Turkey 35%. That's not much of a difference, perhaps if I can have your views on that. But also concerning to know that the tax to GDP ratio currently stands at 25.5%, and the tax to GDP ratio is higher than most African countries, with only 8 countries having a higher tax than we have. Nigeria's tax to GDP, and this is interesting, is only 4%. Indicating favorable tax circumstances in Nigeria, if we can compare to Nigeria, and Nigeria overtaking us as the leading country in Africa. Should we take note of these figures? It's complex. We're not tax experts, we're only politicians. And I'd just like to have your views with regard to the macro situation with regard to it. I will, of course, email with you. Thank you very much for the email address. Our response to the draft rate and monetary amount, which gives effect to the budget. And that's where the reality set in terms of increases in taxes. And then just with regard to the second point, the small and medium-sized businesses, it's just the fact that people are also owners of small businesses. You don't make a net profit, I don't know, because of the high costs in running these businesses. And unfortunately, so that then I think the contribution in corporate tax is only 19%. The personal income tax, I think, is 37%. So it's much higher. And I think if we can improve the profit margins in terms of small business, we could have a higher income in terms of tax. That doesn't seem to materialize. It is concerning, but thank you. I think you're doing remarkable work with regards to our comment is to note that a low profit margin in terms of the high costs is a problem. And then on transfer pricing, I will also email you the submission of the DA with regard to transfer pricing, and I congratulate the chair who prompted us in terms of having a document from each party to present it to the committee. But I will also forward you this. I have it ready if that is needed. What I find in transfer pricing, which is interesting, is transfer pricing is not necessarily legal, and certainly we have to step up as legislators in terms of adequate legislation. I think that falls within our ambit, and I gradually will encourage them there. But avoiding tax and tax evasion, if I could just have your views on it. What is avoiding tax and what is tax evasion? It's so easy for a business to inflate your expenses and then have to pay less tax. But it's also that's more difficult for a business to deflate those income, and that's why they move it to the low tax haven. And what could we do in terms of, say, Mauritius on our doorstep, offering, incentives for people for multinational companies to have the Mauritius as a tax haven. I wonder what engagements we can do at the international level with the countries that have tax havens and eroding our tax base significantly. But we will definitely also email you our documents with regard to this. And then, thank you. I'd just like to see the last remark here, if you'll. This is state duty, which is actually the wealth tax. And of course, we are against the wealth tax. We think people should be encouraged, and I don't want to I think you've heard this many times, we should encourage entrepreneurship, we should encourage private sector and bigger wealthy individuals to invest and reinvest. Some people can create wealth, create jobs, and that is the point of view that we endorse. But estate duty, what has happened now in the farming community, constituency where I live, is that farming prices have doubled in terms of land. I wanted to buy a farm when I was a little bit younger, about 10 years ago. I wasn't young then, but I was a little bit younger. I think the price was about 3,000 rand a hectare. It is now 45,000 rand a hectare. Now, when a person passes away, he hasn't made the necessary provisions in terms of insurance and all that. He bankrupts his estate, unfortunately. This is what's really in reality happening out there. And perhaps the problem in terms of the state that he lies with regard to the valuation of the assets, perhaps your views of how that would be addressed. But thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. Just in regard to carbon tax, I don't want to infuriate Mr. Mamonio today, but I think it's real time. I think we are in a substantial debate in terms of the world economy. I think we all support that we must move towards a green economy. I would rather see incentives instead of taxation. But if there needs to be taxation and if we have to honour our commitments that was made at international level, please bear in mind that we are totally dependent on solar at this point in time. I think this is a debate we'll have over and over again. But if we can have the timing of the carbon tax in terms of time frames, I would like to have your views on that. Thank you very much.
I think we should draw the meeting to a close now, because by the time you reply to those questions, it'll be 2:30. You know, we have a tax commissioner, Judge. But we also have a tax commissar, and that's Des van Rooyen. So when the David says, we are not tax experts, he's speaking for the DA, right? Not by. So over to Des.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. I'm not sure of this title, but it's fine. Tech Commissar. The last time I was called Commissar, I was in a military base somewhere. let me just share my first observation. You know, this issue of a committee and a commission continue to be referred to a bit interchangeably, even the high office of the country. Now, what I find interesting is that, as the judge indicated at the beginning, as the difference, I mean, between the two, he in fact continued to interchangeably refer to committee as a commission. I find that very interesting. Now I understand the sort of this confusion. But anyway, thank you very much for that explanation. That has at least given an indication of what are we expecting from your committee. Chair, I don't have, unlike the Honorable Rose, I don't have a lot of questions. Mine are just two questions and one comment. Preliminary review on the comparison between the various taxation types indicates that we still have some space on the tampering with a VAT provision in terms of percentage points. Now, the question that I want to pose, Judge, is the sustainability of our progressive nature of our tax system. To what extent can we confidently say with the shrinking space of taxation provision, we will retain the progressive nature of our tax system? And the second question is, I've been told that tax by nature is a very, very complex and technical tax system. It's a very complex and technical setup. And I can see, as you have said in your presentation, that this is one area that you want to venture into. I'm not sure what's the difference if you are to compare our tax system with what is happening globally. I'm asking this question because in your submission, the impression was created that we still have some space, I mean, to simplify our tax administration. Now, I'm not sure if there's any maybe a case in point that can be that we can be referred to as an example of a simplified tax system in the world. Lastly, my comment is that I think looking at the releases that have been made in as far as the subcommittees are concerned, it's very clear that as a committee we might have missed an opportunity to interact with some of these releases. I'm saying this because I've realized that some of the work that has been released by the committee find its way in some tax legislation, and I know as a committee we have observed that, but for some international salary keep on free as suggested by the tax committee, by the business committee, you know. So as a way of comment, I think that is on us. We really need to find a way of interrogating some of these releases at an appropriate time. Because as they are related to the minister, I don't see anything that stops us as a committee. I mean, for saying as they are related to the minister, let them report to the committee. So as we start understanding the details of some of these services, I think that's something that should share as a comment we really need to look at as a committee and see how do we, because I mean, coming now to tell Ed, I mean, looking at the number or the series of releases that have been made, I think we might be missing a very, very important, what you call, opportunity to make input and enrich this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. And, Judge, I have bad news for you. I really do think that the time that you have given yourself, the time frame you have given yourself, are not sufficient. And you are going to understand why I am saying so. You know, the issues that you are raising, and I think probably Honorable Ross will be very happy with this. I actually agree with him 100%. And I agree with you. And I also agree with you about the issue of tax morality and the relationship between, you know, the perception or even corruption itself and your ability to be able to fulfill the mandate that you have been given. And therefore, I think your work is actually much broader. The way the terms of reference captures it captures it well. But I'm afraid I think it's actually much broader than that, because one, I have a very strong feeling that given the digital economic space that we find ourselves in, given our own colonial history, and given all the different challenges that we have in South Africa, there's almost the need to really demystify the whole tax regime and simplify it. Maybe we even need, as a starting point, a policy position paper or taxation that is bringing everything together. And having said that, I just wanted to find out from you, and this is my perspective, and you will forgive me, I'm more, my former life as a municipal practitioner or functionary comes to the fore. You know, for some strange reason, I don't know why historically we tended to have this fragmentation in terms of taxation, where you will have property tax at municipal level. And at national level, you have a range of other taxes from your payers to end and so forth and so forth. And I'm not sure whether we are really approaching the taxation issues from this fragmentation point of view, as opposed to actually addressing taxation as a whole, so that taxation is not necessarily the issue of few people that are beginning to feel that they are being squeezed out. And believe you me, I really do believe that personal income tax in South Africa is not sustainable in the way we are approaching it. Every one of us are feeling the pinch. And to me, I therefore think that maybe there is a need, and probably you might comment on that, for us to really rethink the entire taxation system, and given the context in which we find ourselves, where for argument's sake you could say, whereas if you are, you know, as long as you own property, there will be, your tax is going to be, you know, equivalent to your net worth, you know, and or your gross worth, whatever it is, and I think maybe we need to deal with that. And but the other thing that I also think that is going to be important, and I think from the ANC, and I'm not going to be shy about that, because it's actually there is something that is very unfortunate that has come to synonymize the ANC with corruption. And if you actually look in the constitution of the ANC, it is actually an ANC to be corrupt. And therefore, I feel it's going to be important that even as we come with this tax position paper, we need to be looking the segregation morality with, you know, there must be punitive measures. Once you are found to have been corrupt, somehow there must be devastating consequences. And probably the issue of addressing that is actually hitting where it matters most. You know, that once you are found, it's got to take whatever that you have, basically. And that way, it's going to discourage a lot of people from actually getting involved in those type of activities. At the moment, people just get a slap on the fist, and that's it. And I think it creates a very, very bad impression, because after all, if we are going to realize this vision 2030, there is no way we can do it without a tax. And therefore, I think maybe my question is really around the whole system of integration. How do we integrate these taxes? And I'm going to tell you, because my constituent is actually your black African middle class in particular. And they're actually feeling a squeeze, because they feel as though the tax regime is very unfair to them. Number one, you actually end up being taxed more than triple, because maybe you are not able to keep your documentation right. You would have attended the tax, but because you are not able to produce your evidence, you end up being taxed again, and then as well, extended family that you are supporting that is not taken into account. You are starting from zero base, because there is no property that you have inherited. You know, you are starting from a zero base, and all those taxes have to be taken into account. And in fact, I attended one meeting where people were actually very, very angry about this thing, because they were feeling as though if you are an African, you are almost paid 80 times, especially if they are middle class, and you are coming, there is a perception that you are a black diamond. And whereas, in fact, you are actually squeezed very much. You know, and I'm not sure whether those type of issues have been taken into account. And finally, the issue that I also wanted you to say is that had there been consideration that has been given in giving some exemptions, or even, I know you said it has been very little information around SMEs, and probably the area that I'm talking about falls under SMEs. But, you know, the reality of the situation is that the African merchant was squeezed and squashed left, right, and center. And right now, he is not necessarily given a space to grow his business, because there is no incentive to actually grow business in the township. If you are in the township, you are actually even, your premiums are even more when it comes to your power. It's more than somebody that lives in the suburb. There is a disincentive completely for you. If you are in the township, you are penalized for being black, that's number one. You are penalized for being an African merchant, because you are in the township, and your premiums when it comes to insurance, you are considered as a high risk, as this and that, and it's so much. And therefore, this is why I am saying, the time frame you have given yourself, I'm afraid it looks like it's very short, because the mandate that you've been given is much, much broader than that. And I really say, I want to say to you, I'm really, really pleased to finally meet you. And I think you are doing a fantastic job. And I like the way you are so truthful in the way you are actually approaching these matters. And Chair, I can only take my hat. Thank you.
That's for today. Allow me to make excuses and lamentations, and then ask my question. But I'm worried because you said nothing before the comments. So I'm worried. Our comments. You didn't make a present, so I'm worried. No. No, it's not okay. Let me speak to Mr. Davis. Pardon my ignorance. I'm a politician, so I'll juxtapose my views based on my political intuition. But I've got a perception that there is nothing complex about aggression. And I'll tell why I have this perception. I was taught economics by Kenny McQueen, who taught me algebra for the first time at the level of university when I did not do mathematics, and I was able to pass with a split between 60-70%. So Kenny McQueen said to me, there is nothing called mathematics is difficult. And then he proved it by putting it as the most difficult man. You know, he would give me a sum and say, do it now, I want to see it, and then what is your problem? And he made me to believe there's nobody who's stupid. It's just that we conceive things differently. That's the perception I came all the time. So I also have this funny belief that the macroeconomic policy of a country follows the political and ideological outlook of the country. So if a country wants to be a developmental state, it will set its tax policies to follow its political beliefs. So if a country wants to be a liberal country, it will liberalize its tax policies. So that, to me, it's as simple as that. That's how I think, and if it doesn't make sense, it's okay. You will not have to respond to some of the things. And I also want you to partner us in advance, because when you get to the engagement, the tail end, you will want to stick to the tax policies and the framework more than the actual propositions that are made. Remember, also in my belief, I do not believe there is a wrong or a right tech approach. I believe it's working at the time. And we always hold different opinions on what should be implemented at that time. That's why countries forever will always review their tech systems. And I think you will pick up when members make contributions that they've got a different view whether the minister should have implemented the company tax or the personal income tax. It will depend on where you are and how you feel at that time. So you always have those differentiated opinions on the basis of what is of interest to a particular individual or company. So mine is as basic as that. So I do not want to get involved into a discussion whether the approach that you have taken in the current conjuncture is the right one or the wrong one. You raise a lot of principles that we need to look into. And I think we'll be able to relate to those issues, Honorable Chair, when we get a final report. That's my take. So I would want to go to them as and when the report comes. Because the report is a scientific report. The report is not a political report. It's a comparison between tax systems all over the world and what we believe should work in the current context of us. So as and when we engage there. And I liked your mood to say you are open up to engage with everybody. The advantage of engagement is to get collective views. But finally, you come to one opinion, and it's not necessarily a homogenic opinion. It will be an opinion that needs to be implemented at that time, and so forth. But I've got one question. Just one question for you. You said the Tax Administration Act created its own challenges. You don't have to answer it now if you have not finished the work on it. But I'm interested to know, because if the Tax Administration Act has created challenges, then the answer will be, how then are we going to deal with those challenges? So there might be proposals that you are making in the report. You know, if it will come, then it's still fine. I will engage with them as and when it comes. But if it's possible to also give an answer now, it will be fine. And then I don't also want to make assumptions that you did not look deeper into BEF. But it will be interesting to get your thorough opinion on BEF erosion. Because there is this issue of illicit operations that are taking place worldwide. People hold different opinions. We need statistics. And statistics are very difficult to compile. You know, if you look at people that do tests, it's always small committees. And it's a very laborious process to get that compilation. And it also relates to digitization of information in the 21st century and how things are, and the differentiated approaches that countries take in terms of the digital economy. So I'll be interested. But the other point, which I might suspect that you are doing, like, it's what is the contribution of small business in the whole tax system of the country, given the fact that in our case, the small business is still highly informal. Somebody standing on the street corner selling goods and cannot capture how much profit they make. You can't measure whether they can make contributions. And the most controversial one is sex work. People think that sex work, when a person is standing on the street, they might be a highly professionalized industry that might be making lots of money to be able to contribute to our tax system. And that's my personal opinion. It's not my party's position. It's my personal opinion. There are so many small business.
This is an exchange. There are no decisions being taken. So people can speak their mind. So tell you are free. In fact, I forgot about sex work. I think it's really good you brought it up. It's a good point.
You know, my grandmother was an entrepreneur, so we sold almost everything. I sold my clothes. If I needed cash,
I forgot about sex. I don't know what that deals with sex work, but anyway.
I know you'll be jumping, but it's not being jumped. It's not money. We're talking money here. We're not talking. You see, I know. That's why I said it's my personal opinion, because morality will be universal, reality, and then, they'll be that strange. And you see, that's why I made a preliminary to explain that it was my party's position. I'm just trying to think aloud, and think, and the reality with the African continent, having entered into the economic space later than everybody else, and with all the challenges you have, and I can assure you, you're not going to be friends with many people with the statements you made. Business will not like you, but we will always give you our backing, so you can say anything you like. We'll make a lot of noise and don't worry about that. Just say it as is and give them all the facts. And a judge, you see, they can't accuse you of anything. You have collected all the facts. And then all you need to do is just educate us to back you up by giving us the necessary, and then we can. So basically that. So it's always, then we can take it from there. But we appreciate that. And I think we'll get this education more and more. Yeah, so thank you very much.
Yeah, just very quickly, one is, I know you'll see the class, so your colleague will take over, obviously. How significant is this tax work that you're doing, right, the restructuring, in the sense that, I saw MoMA, I don't know if it's accurate, but even if it's flamboyant, there's a sense of truth, or grain of truth, the other day, in Business Report about a month ago, I cut it out for the committee members, and I have to send it out. An expert saying that the financial sector regulation that's pending, the Twin Peaks first as well, is probably the most fundamental restructuring of the financial sector since the 1920s. I don't know if that's a huge exaggeration, I call it. Now, we have the Caps Commission. My sense is just, I'm new to this area, last year. It's not my forte, but I'm not new. What I mean is, compared to the people who are familiar with the Caps Commission, I used to read about it in Business Day and Business Report, but how fundamental it seems quite much more far-reaching. And I wondered, it's maybe a wild thought, that it's something to do with sweeping changes that are pending in financial sector regulation, and also maybe to some extent this is of a similar, gravity or what's the word, magnitude. The second thing is, I'm struck by the fact there's only 139 submissions, given the amount of work you've done and the persistent and constant engagement with the public. Is that actually only 139 submissions? Why? Then, I sort of understand, as a chair of the tax committee, given that this stuff is technical at the moment, you must have your own strong views as well. I'm not sure what latitude you have to answer these questions, given the sensitivity of your position and role at the moment, and that it's an open meeting. But how progressive really our tax regime? It is very progressive, but if you compare it to, say, a typical social democratic country, are we that different? Could we say room for greater maneuver and so on? I'm also struck by this World Bank report in November last year saying how much the tax system in our country is equitable, how much it has distributed or redistributed, right? I thought you said today it's probably the most redistributive of any of the tax regimes. Yeah.
I thought they said that we are amongst the most leaders. If you are, I want to know, because I'm going to speak right now at 12:30 on the guide to the past, right? Please tell me that, because I want to share that with the people here. On retirement saving, that's a big area that National Treasury is working on. Now, you know, they've been engaging for a while, and presumably the work you're doing must fit into the deadline. They're already beginning to change in piecemeal, but of course the unions and others feel the whole regime should be overhauled and so on. Are you sliding in with or being finished with the deadline? On the small business, it's a thing that Makosi raises, but I also get that from my own experiences with other people, including when we did the property tax, property rates policy, of course, the emerging African middle class, they're concerned that for the first time they're buying houses. Here we are slapping property rates on them. It's unfair. We had that lobby Makosi even then in 2003-04. So on the one hand, I really think we should not have a tax regime that impedes, because we're so desperate in the entrepreneurial culture, particularly amongst Africans. But on the other hand, we also need a tax culture. For non-Africans, a tax culture to some odd degree is there. Africans are newly emergent in the mainstream of the economy. Well, there was a small strata before 94. So I can understand the resistance and the frustrations that Makosi refers to. But there has to be some balance, it seems to me. Even a small business, they should be taxed very marginally, but they should pay, even if it's 1 cent a month, so that tomorrow you know you'll be paying 2 cents a month and so on. Because if you are a small business person, there's a large chunk of unemployed in rural poor. And even they, who are relatively, let's say, slightly better off, have to give 1 cent a month, and the people in housing must give 500 cents a month. So I think it is the start. It's interesting, the thing that Tandy, it's never occurred to me, but she's right. But I suppose that this broader issue is about whether we're going to legalize sex work. My own view is very right. I'm not a politician. I think it should be legalized. That's not our party's view. But the Department of Justice, when I was hearing justice at one stage, don't ask me why. I've got no legal background or any attitude. And I hated it, by the way, let me tell you. I found it immensely boring, actually immensely boring. And I learned my ministers were jurisprudence. The 2 years I was there. I learned very little, I didn't grow, but I have to do it because the party deployed me, and I accept it. I can't choose which committee I'm chair. I accept it, and I did my work, but I'm just saying it's very boring. But I remember then, there's an entity, a legal entity, that advises government, a law advisor, law commission, had done some work, and then I was interviewed on radio, and they pounced on me about this thing. It wasn't about that. And I said, I was very surprised, Ali, at the number of people, including senior ministers in Iran, to say you were really good. Meaning that you don't have to say you're really good. It means that they mean what you're saying. It doesn't matter whether you're good or not. If you're saying the right thing. So what they really had to say was, you really said the right thing, which I'm afraid to say, Eunice, and you in Parliament can say that you're great. You'll be surprised. I would have got up 12 to 15 calls, or I bumped into people in the House who said, really, you were fantastic. I didn't expect it to come, and I was very clear, hardly like you, I said, our party doesn't have a position, but as a social democratic party, I can go by those values. We are humane, right? We're a national democratic movement. We claim to be even more radical than a social. What would a typical, I said, social democratic, national democratic movement likely to say that? But I kept emphasizing. They said we're really great, so you're surprised at the number of senior people in the ANC who feel the same way that Tandy, I think, is into what I certainly think. Then, on the issue of corruption and hate. Now, you see, I agree with people who say that if we were less corrupt, then people are more likely to pay the taxes. But I also think it's true to say that no matter how open and democratic and non-corrupt you are, people do not want to share. And they will still seek ways of avoiding taxes. And I think that it's partly endemic. Partly, I'm not the crude person that says corruption is endemic in capitalism. But I think it's partly the case that if you have a free market society, that invariably you will have a measure of individualism and a propensity not to want to pay, which is not to say the richest capitalist would not want to pay. I'm simply saying, in my view, for what it's worth, that you can't reduce tax evasion purely to corruption. That actually the rich, the super rich particularly, will usually in general, not everybody, seek to avoid paying tax. You know, nobody wants to pay taxes, right? So I think one shouldn't reduce it simply to the fact that there are high levels of corruption. We're not condoning it, David, but I'm simply saying, in my own view, we can agree to disagree, is that there's a propensity not to pay tax. And it's almost like a value that's hidden in the market, society, some parties. I'm not saying David didn't have a certain support, but the party which it comes from. I think a social democratic dispensation is more likely to get people to pay, but it's still a market coin. Not that I'm saying, therefore, you must go to Soviet commanders and stuff, which is also very corrupt. Then I want to say that I agree a little bit with Dez, actually. He's been persistent, to be fair to him, that we should engage with you. But we had a program that's quite demanding. And really, I think he's right. What I would like members to think about is that we set up a tax subcommittee of this committee, led by Dez, who has and then another ANC member and one opposition. Or maybe in this case, we can have two oppositions. It doesn't make any difference. That will be engaging with you informally as well. And will come to us and say, look, it's time we met with you. Now, Dumasani Yamshise, who's got a PhD as in tax, right? Is that your speciality?
I've got a background in tax, Chair. Not a PhD in tax, but a background.
Yeah, he's got a background. Now, it strikes me, look at our researcher. Our wonderful researcher is on leave. She, unfortunately, fell at some conference and I told you, no, she's out of action for 7 weeks. So it was kind of maybe late in the day, but you have been making notes. If you could pull some of the things together, because you're not going to be able to answer all of them here. Instead of using some notes, we'll give it to Dumasani. And then what we will do is within 7 days, we will send you the questions. But we will look at it, give it to Dez first, and then we'll pull the questions together and send it to you. And then at some appropriate time, I know you're very busy. My own view is that you're doing very good work given that you're part-time committee. I really think you must commend you. Look, from what I can tell, as a part-time committee, you've made enormous strides. I don't know, Bomo. I mean, I think you have. I think it's an example to other committees of this sort. So we commend you. Because you're also advised in your full-time, I'm not sure what your colleague does, but I'm sure you've got a full-time job that demands a lot of people. Well, you're a lawyer, academic? No, man, I'm a former academic. No, you can't take our cafes. We're going to miss you 1 hour again, and then you think we're working very hard. Finally, a question I'd like to ask you, but I won't, which is, can you tell me how you feel having written the book that did with Bob Fine so many years ago and where the country is now? Buddy, Google Dennis Davis and Bob Fine and read the last chapter of that book and ask if it's the same judge, Dennis Davis.
Yeah. Well, I'm very pleased that you remember the book during my Tutskis phase. I'm not sure I've totally given up on that, I should tell you. No. I'll try to just broadly answer as much as I can.
Yeah.
So that I can help members. Firstly, questions of tax to GDP, which is what you were talking about. I'm not going to deal. I've just taken some of the notes and we'll deal with them as best you can. You know, there's no real magic formula about tax to GDP. In fact, we got a submission, and in fact, I'm almost surprised that Vinish Pillay, who is our full-time person, put together a amount of submissions, but I think there are many more than that. He's just taken long ones. But, you know, we got a submission a long time ago from some business community which suggested that the tax to GDP ratio should be less than 20%. By the way, one of the things I've learned in this game is how many people call themselves economists. My set of economists is someone got a PhD. Anything that can, and the reason is because I got 4 years of economics, I call myself an economist. I went and talked to the IMF and the World Bank about this, and it was very interesting. Because I said, so what's the optimum? They said, there's no such thing as optimum. It depends to a large degree what kind of state you want. And so the point made earlier about tax policy and political policy, absolutely correct. I agree with you 1,000%. It depends what kind of political philosophy you start with. If you're looking towards a social democratic state, and since I'm on record in many writings of saying our constitution is actually a social democratic constitution, you would expect, and I'm if it's rightly, you'd expect the thing to be in the high 20s, 25%, 27%, 28% to GDP. Of course, it depends what you do with the money. You know, quite honestly, if you spend spend money on investment and on capital structure rather than on salaries, you can go very high because you actually then be productive. It's when you actually spend too much on consumption as opposed to investment that the problem arises. But there's no magic figure, and I'm irritated by people. I'm not referring to court here. I'm irritated by people saying, it's got to be 20%. There's no magic number. In fact, what was ridiculous about the Hatch Commission is we did have a magic number. And when I look back on it, it was completely back of the cigarette box stuff because we didn't really have any serious empirical basis for that. That's number one. Secondly, because Cookie knows here, he knows more about tax than anybody else in the whole country, and I'm prepared to go out of David on that. He points out to me, I have some of them, but not all of them, so I've now got many more, thanks to him, that I can respond to you on. Individual maximum marginal rates of tax in many other countries, Australia 49%, Austria 50%, Chile 40%, China 45%, Croatia 40%, Canada 50%, France 45%, US, when you take all the taxes, including the state taxes, 55%. But frankly, you know, the 41 is not anywhere near the highest ranking at all. There are problems about it, and I'll come back to that in a moment, almost let me do it right up front. I'm not happy either about the 41% that lower paid people pay the extra percentage of tax. But as I try to indicate, when you've inherited the kind of structural economy we have, there's serious problems in relation to that. I'll get back to some of the points briefly. In relation to the question of state duty, I hear the point about the wealth tax. I understand the point about creating entrepreneurs. I'm not persuaded, however, that by wealthy human beings giving vast sums of money to the next generation, that creates entrepreneurship. What it creates is trustafarians, people who basically live on their trusts of their parents. Doesn't create any, you know, maybe I'm just old-fashioned. And I often believe, as I say to my children, I mean, since I'm the age of their neighbor, they're only going to get a major respect out of me. But I've often said to them, you know, the best thing I can do for you is to give you a decent education. And then you're on your own. So I'm not persuaded at all that properly structured state duty is going to deter entrepreneurship. What it does deter is greed. And frankly, what's another matter entirely? So I'm unrepentant about this. I do not think there's any empirical evidence to suggest that the least of state duty, which promotes legitimacy and fairness, is a particular problematic. I'm not talking about wealth tax in a new system, I'm just talking about this. In relation to the question you quite right, tax the boys versus tax the baby, came up a lot of questions. Of course, we all know the technical answer, that tax avoidance is when you register somebody who practices the art of tax planning, and they advise you to minimize taxes in the four corners of the legislation. Tax evasion, on the other hand, is where you essentially don't disclose your income. Illegally, you're behaving in a criminal fashion. Now, of course, it blurs. There was a huge amount of debate about that recently, a couple of years ago, with a decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal that got the whole thing terribly confused. I think that's now been corrected by a couple of more recent decisions. I'm referring to an NWK case, but it's been recently in a case called Bosch and some others. The Supreme Court of Appeal has made the distinction much clearer. I think that when we talk about base evasion and profit shifting, we are dealing with both. I think there are, I mean, let me give you an example, a well-publicized example. I don't know what happened here. The Revenue Department will doubtless have been quite into this. But as you all know, this is public knowledge, that when the Marikana Commission was going, there was cross-examination of Lonmin. And there was the question as to a figure of 218 million rand in a particular year that Lonmin had saved through routing income in a particular way. My understanding, whether true or not, is that Lonmin said it was perfectly legal. Maybe. May have well been legal in the sense that they disclosed this and they charged certain royalty, whatever the case may be. I want to make it absolutely clear, I'm not suggesting that any impropriety on the part of Lonmin, I'm simply reflecting upon well-publicized facts. But that may well have been. But of course, it's perfectly open to the Revenue Department to say, well, quite honestly, that's an excessive charge. It may not be legal, but we're going to use the tax avoidance sections of our Act, as they do all over the world, to stop that. As indeed they should, if it does occur. The tax evasion problem, of course, is where all sorts of secretion of profits are taking place without proper reportage to the revenue. And that's why, particularly with regard, I think, to all these very wealthy people having offshore trusts in fancy jurisdictions. But there, I think, is a lot of tax evasion. We know that there was the whistleblower at HSBC who reported, we all know that because it came out publicly, somewhere in the region of, I think, 24 billion rand
of it, just over $2 billion, was money held in HSBC's accounts, which were disclosed by the whistleblower, which are owned somewhat directly or indirectly by South Africans. That means that might be legal, because many of them may have taken amnesty, many of them may have had legal money. Knowing that list, looking at that list, it struck me that a whole lot of people were clearly legal. But I don't know if they all were. And of course, you know, you have to ask the revenue to what happened, but that, there may well be tax evasion, and that has to be dealt with. So those two things blur one into the other. Let me just make one other point about tax, and because the broader question, tax and the question of tax policy, because Chase rightly pointed out, if you're a social democratic regime, then system things are different. Inequality has become a major issue in the world. I mean, Thomas Piketty's book has certainly focused our attention on that. And there's now another book that I could commend to people by Sir Anthony Atkinson, recent book on inequality, which I just happened to have read on the plane coming back from the States recently. In which he makes, and he's a very distinguished economist, who makes out the case that one of the ways in which you deal with inequality is through high taxation, provided that you rebate that back by way of education and other forms of capital expenditure. It's well worth having a look, because it does explode the myth, which Paul Krugman has been writing about a lot, that simply having low taxes, like doing what Tea Party does in the US, actually promotes economic growth. We need to have that debate. There's a huge amount of nonsense being spoken about this. And I just mentioned Atkinson's book because it's very distinguished and it's very, very worthwhile. Anthony Atkinson's called Inequality. And if you can't... quite a lot of room to it now. Let me try to... there were some really important points made. I just want to deal with them. It is absolutely correct that people who, for the first time, and that means African people who for the first time, as you rightly say, are now in the process of democracy beginning to develop some form of income, some form of capital, one can't, you know, there's a sense of unfairness. I understand that. But we have two problems about that. Firstly, I'm not happy about the fact that they're paying additional taxes they shouldn't pay. Well, that's one of the things that we need to do in terms of tax administration. If it's a question that... that the taxes are too high, that's something we are looking at. You're quite right. It's an important question. But there's a really important issue we have to bear in mind, that we have below that a huge amount of people who earn barely nothing. Millions of our fellow South Africans, who mostly, if not all, are black people. And we have a class question here too. I'm sorry to go back to my old book. But what I mean by that is those people, they need us too. And that's why we have to collect sufficient for those tax and transfers. And yes, we are the best system of all ones. Professor Woodard can talk about that, and we give you a copy of the report. It's something you should be proud of. I agree entirely about small and medium-sized businesses. But let me say a couple of things about it. Tax is not the solution. Because the problem isn't, it cannot pay any tax. As such. So we want to, that's why we need more information, because we want, I'm saddened when I hear about people in sensitive lives. They shouldn't. We need to encourage them in the townships all over this country that those people be helped. That's why I'm hoping that the Department of Small Business will help them. Insofar as we're concerned, we want to make sure that there's the least red tape possible for small businesses so that they don't spend money on administrative costs they can't barely afford. But the trick us, I don't mean that pejoratively, was that one would hope to bring them into the system so that one day as they grow, they can start paying tax. Not everyone wants to pay tax now, but the idea is that hopefully some of these small businesses will become successful big businesses or medium-sized businesses, and they will then be in the system and that they can pay. And that was why the idea of the compliance rebate, to say the best way we could actually spend the money that goes is not through some of the incentives that do not seem to work empirically, and we have some evidence on that, but rather by ensuring that we actually get them into the system at minimal, if no cost and no administrative hassle for them. So that's very, very important. In relation to the point about tax administration, I was asked, you know, about the challenges. What I mean by that is not that necessarily there are problems, but the tax administration act is a complex piece of legislation
with a huge amount of requirements and powers given to review. Many of them are uncertain because they haven't investigated the problem. People are not 100% sure of what their rights are. It's nothing. It's understandable when you bring in new legislation that people have to negotiate their way through it. And that's really what I was talking about in relation to the tensions which often exist between the Commissioner's Office and the Revenue and the Tax Bank Committee. On the question of simplification, which was asked, well, what I meant by that, what I don't think, there were a couple of questions in relation to that, Chair. There was the question of looking holistically at the tax system. I take members' point because when Jill Mockus, when she was still governor of the Reserve Bank, came to see us, one of the things she said to us, we're in the sort of trouble that we are. We're not growing very much and worrying about questions of deficits. One needs to think out of the box. And she did right. And so, of course, you are correct that in some way, perhaps we will have to take longer. We'll have to look at what the optimum tax system is for our country. At this point in time, what we're trying to do is to develop, to be as prudent as possible. When you're in the position that we are at present, you're trying to develop a sustainable source of revenue so that you don't run up the sort of insurmountable deficits that increase our interest costs. Already, you know, if we collect plus minus R100 billion tax, we're spending over R100 billion of that on interest costs. You can't allow us to go too high because otherwise you don't have money for anything else. And that's why we have to be, we are worried about the sustainability. How sustainable is our present system? Well, that's a really interesting question. And that's why we have said for a long time that as unpalatable as it might be, we have to think our way through the balance between indirect tax of that and direct tax. There are all sorts of things you can do with indirect tax which essentially make it less retrogressive and more progressive, as indicated by a recent commission inquiry into the UK tax system. And it's possible. So we've got to start thinking through those sorts of conundrums, because at the income tax level, absent base erosion and profit shifting, there's not a huge amount of leverage. And the one thing I'm pretty clear about, you can't keep on taxing at the lower end by increasing their rates. Just cannot do that. You're right, people are backing to make ends meet, and we can't, we've got no further play in the system in that particular regard. So I agree entirely. I also agree that corruption is not the only reason people don't pay tax. Tax evasion is rife all over the world. I think, to a large degree, it's probably a product of the capitalist system, but I know that social democratic systems are troubled by that too. I do think, however, that we get a better tax money. You don't get a perfect tax money. You do get a better tax money when people feel that their money is being spent in a way it should. I do think, and that's okay, I would encourage you to broadcast as loudly as I'm trying to do myself, that our tax and transfer system works. I think that's my responsibility. I'll give you an illustration. I went to a breakfast somebody called himself an economist, and he was going on a vagrant about the budget, 2015, and said it was actually rather bizarre because there was this extremely well-fed group of people who certainly didn't need extra buck or two, and paid a large amount of money to come to this breakfast, budget breakfast, and he was saying, you know, what on earth, he said, does this budget give us, you know, just more taxes? I thought myself as they guzzled a large breakfast. You know, that was obscene. But why it was interesting to me, I pointed out, was it's not what it gives us. It's what gives the balance of the country. Because we won't sleep particularly well at night if, in fact, we don't create the kind of social stability in the tax and transfer system. So I'm saying to you, there are things that are important. And the more we actually say these things, and more, in fact, you know, we have prudence on the side of both the expenditure and the revenue and the tax collecting side, which means obviously a better public morality. And I'm not attributing blame anywhere. I'm just simply saying that's the reality of life. Then, whilst we'll never eradicate tax evasion, we can in fact create a better morality, and we need to create a better morality because it's part of the notion of citizenship. I do think, one final point about small, medium-sized businesses, there should be incentives, but they're not tax incentives. Because if you're not paying tax, no point. The point is, how else do we create a climate of small business, and I hope that can be done. Again, I think that comes back to an earlier point I made, that tax is not the panacea for all within the society. In relation to the question, how do we compare globally? It seems to me that, you know, most countries use a mix of direct and indirect tax, pretty similar to ours. I think we're running some quite efficient systems, like our VAT system, as I'll start indicate. I think we're also partly a creature of the inherited way of distribution of wealth from apartheid. I'm quite sure that if we grow 5-6% a year for the next 5 or 6 years, many of these issues would become far less problematic for all sorts of reasons. But I don't think that we are out of filter. With regard to the question of simplification, when I was part of the CAT Commission, Eddie Broomberg SE, who is the leading silk at the Johannesburg Bar, was briefed to actually what we call plain language the Tax Act, which meant take it start. It proved to be an impossible task. No? Impossible. They never got off the ground. Mama has a prejudice about lawyers. Yeah, as I know this chair, so does you, and I'm about to leave. But I can say just in my last point about this, that does not excuse the fact that we've got a system that is hugely overcomplicated. I accept it, and I think that one of the things we want to do is see how can we make the system easier. Now, in relation to the earlier question, can we make it easier in relation to the taxes that we impose? Well, we need to think this through very carefully. But one thing I think we do in South Africa, which is not just about tax, generally, we often create Rolls-Royce legislation without thinking whether, in fact, we've got the administration to actually implement the Rolls-Royce legislation. You know, we just don't have the kind of capacity that they may have in the US or in Sweden, etc. And so we need to actually ensure that the legislation we impose can be implemented properly in terms of the administration available. We're very lucky to have a first-rate tax commission of Inland Revenue Service. But I do think that our point is not in the sense to start de novo. It's very difficult to do that. Our thing is to try to see where we can minimize the complexity. And I'm quite sure that over the years, those of you who sat on the committee must have looked at some of the draft legislation and said, what on earth do they mean here? Why can't this be made in more simple terms? That, I think, covers most issues. One final point. We very much welcome liaison with you guys. And if you have a subcommittee, that's fantastic. We welcome that. We want to hear from you because you can tell us things that, you know, also keep us on straight and narrow. So we welcome any cooperation and dialogue. And rest assured that if you want us to address your committee, I know you're busy, but whenever you want to, because these reports are now starting to come through. I'll, of course, talk to the minister as well, and you may want to raise it with him as to how he sees the reports that we generate being distributed to you before they get to the public so that you can consider them, and I'm sure you'll do that too. Chair, I'm excuse myself, and I'm very sorry.
Van Gorin will keep in touch with your committee. Yeah. And while you're there, I'm sure David will be in the committee.
Okay.
You can also educate him based on your book about that.
I'm happy to do that.
For everything. I'm teasing you, David. Like, do you want to come in and respond to the colleague? Can you take off? Yeah, do you want to say
I'm sure you want to.
Yeah. Do you want to respond to anything or comment or answer your question?
Thank you. Let me say something about the progressivity of the system. We didn't spend that much time on that. And excuse my voice, I'm not terribly well, I'm kind of croaky. So, for those of you that have seen the report that the World Bank did last year, they found that our system does an amazing job in terms of redistributing resources from the rich to the poor. And Dennis alluded earlier to the fact that the Gini coefficient goes down from 0.77, if you would measure a Gini in the absence of government, all the way down to 0.59 once you look at the tax system and the transfer system. But a lot of that redistribution is happening on the expenditure side. It's happening through the transfer system, it's happening through free education and through free healthcare. There isn't a massive amount of redistribution happening via the tax system. So while the tax system is progressive, it is not as progressive as the tax system might be in other countries. So that then leaves us with this issue of, well, how do we make the system more progressive? And one of the difficulties that one faces there is that a tax after VAT almost neutral. Most people spend pretty much everything that they earn. Right? At the top end, people spend a little bit less than they earn. At the bottom end, we have zero rates of food subs, which helps tremendously in terms of reducing the impact of that on the poor. So what you have is a tax that really does affect everybody almost equally. Right. So it's not a progressive tax because everybody is going to pay VAT. When it comes to the indirect taxes, you find that they're somewhat regressive because poorer households, at a proportion of their income, spend somewhat more on cigarettes and alcohol than richer households. Obviously, in absolute terms, the rich spend way, way more on alcohol and tobacco, all right? But as a proportion of your income, poorer households will spend somewhat more. So indirect taxism is regressive. The question is then, well, do you want to do something about that? And there you get into quite a complicated area in that, why do we have taxes on alcohol and tobacco? Because we want to discourage their use. So those taxes are largely there in order to change behavior. They're not primarily there as revenue-raising instruments. So you probably don't want to pay too much of the indirect tax system in order to try and make the system as a whole more progressive. So we're kind of running out of options at this point, right? It's quite hard to think about whether the corporate income tax system is progressive or not. A lot of that depends on assumptions. It's very contested. It's not straightforward to say who ultimately bears the burden of tax when a company pays tax. Some of it is paid by shareholders. Okay, that's fine. That's highly regressive. But some of it is shifted backwards onto employees. If the firm is making less profits, that can then mean that you end up paying lower wages to your workforce. That's not looking progressive, right? And then some of the tax will also be shifted forward onto consumers. And again, that's not particularly progressive. So the corporate income tax, it's hard to measure the incidence. It's hard to measure who really pays the burden of the tax. But what's clear is that it's not straightforward in terms of saying this is a highly progressive tax. So ESOS Act, there's pretty much one tax that we can use for progressivity, and that's the personal income tax. And then it's already alluded to the fact that the burden, that top tax rate is already fairly high, right? So what you have is that you have 97% of personal income tax is paid by 20% of households. Okay. So it's highly progressive in that it's concentrated amongst quite a small group of people. What happens, though, if you try and push that much further? Well, then all sorts of fatty tax avoidance schemes come in. You get all kinds you can get some quite perverse outcomes. Right? So my point is, somewhat hamstrung here. It's not clear to me that one can make the system substantially more progressive than it currently is. I think one can do a little bit better, and I think the macro report alludes to that fact, but I think it's difficult to do a lot about that without saying that actually as we hear in every discussion, what we really need is we need economic growth, we need more jobs, we need to broaden the tax base. And I think it's going to be difficult to make the system more progressive without those things being the case. And then I'll just quickly come back to this point about small business and tax. So of course, another thing is that small businesses do pay tax. They pay VAT, right? They can't claim back their output, their input VAT that they've paid on all the goods that they've purchased. So they are in the VAT system. They're not registered as such, but they are part of that system. I want to reiterate Dan's point that in an ideal world, you would want these businesses to be formalized in some sense, but then you need to incentivize that. You need to make it worth the firm's while to come into the tax net. Right? You don't want them to come into the tax net and then it becomes terribly onerous if you've got to be submitting a tax return every month. There's a whole lot of red tape. That's not, you need to find a way around that. And that was the intention of, in the small business report, the intention of the tax rebate was to say, we will, in effect, we will give you, as a firm, 12,000 Rand a year to compensate you for that compliance cost of coming into the system. And you might still not pay any tax. And you get the benefit that you can, for example, start to claim something like the government tax incentive, right? The ETR, the wage subsidy. So there are ways in which we need to make it easier for small business, but we also need to find creative ways to encourage them to come in. Because, of course, there are two ways to do this. You can have enforcement. You can have SARS go after people, right, and make it punitive if you don't come into the taxes. Or you can rather try and incentivize. And I think it looks like we're all agreeing that incentives in this case would work better. But, I mean, we've got a massive number of fantastic comments here. So it'd be great if we can get this in a more formal way and then we can respond.
Okay. Does anybody want to raise any further? We could tie up after this. Sorry, you want to say something? Let me just come in. You can come in here. Okay. Following what you say. Yeah.
Okay. I think, in fact, I was surprised that the judge and the committee has not been to this committee before. So I think we've seen today just the value add. I think the, you know, having someone like us involved with this process, because I remember at the time this committee was constituted, I was saying to the chair, it's impossible to find independent tax.
Yeah, you told me. Okay.
And because everyone has some vested interests, okay? And so I think, certainly from the Treasury side, I think, and just to raise one or two issues, we'd welcome if the committee comes more often to Parliament. And in fact, I mean, there's a bit of an odd process about the submission of reports. Frankly, that is not a big deal. The minister releases all the reports as they are, okay? And we can look at that process, okay, related to the minister. I don't think there's a need for the committee to look at it before they release, because the committee calls them the first interim report, then they take comments, and nothing stops Parliament from convening these issues. There's only one thing I differ with the judge where I'm not sure if he was completely, you need to believe what he says. He's the deadline, okay? and I'm saying this as a joke, because obviously I think that the 2 years is optimistic, because as they get comments, they have to review. And I think that, in fact, when Minister Gordon set them up, he was also pushing to get comments within 6 months, which or to get something, which really with tax is not an issue. I think tax needs to be a considered and a deeply consultative process. And what this does is it adds to the consultative process. Because, as you know, when we come to you, the announcements are made, we still have 2 rounds of consultation. So I think all of this just adds to it. But I think, as the judge has said, the problem is that everyone who comes to you is really a lobby. So you need to look at the integrity of your process, you know, why even lobbies. I would say to the chair as well, so if you have a carbon tax, all of those, you know, people just come to say, don't do it generally, okay? And it's asymmetric. So you always need to say, like we say to the unions, you guys also need to come. You're not tax experts, but you do need to come and represent the alternative views as well, those who feel that there needs to be more spending and so on. I think just 2 issues that perhaps the committee just does need to look at, because, you know, like they said, the terms of reference are very vast, okay? And I think, given that it's a part-time committee, they've really done sterling work, and I can't believe how much they've produced. But we want to pile even more onto them. So, can you raise the issue? For example, if you look at the terms of reference, there's 4B. There are elements of the financial sector at some point that we do want the committee to look at, okay? And certainly that goes with the regulatory story, like you see in the UK, they have a bank levy, is it good, is it bad? Those are issues that I think would be useful for the committee certainly to look at, but they need to take into account the financial sector reforms that we've been having. And you look at point 9 in the terms of reference, you see, we said to the committee at the time that we are stuck in a particular type of process. And when the judge has said it's very difficult to even understand the legislation, and me not being a lawyer, I don't try and read the tax laws. We have a very dedicated legal side that looks at it. And really the issue here is I don't know how you break this vicious cycle within. I think we've got a good process, but it leads to too many amendments. And it's very hard to break out of it. And we do want the committee at some point to look at the process to see can we, is it possible in fact to simplify the process, because it's easier said than done, just like the plain English tax, because inevitably there are lobbies who come, and the lobbies obviously go for changes. But Having said that, I think it's just healthy every 50 years or so you review the system, because I don't think you want too many changes in a tax system. On the one hand, you want it to be boring. It needs to have certainty, and the committee has recognized this as one of the principles. Yet, on the other hand, it can't be completely static as well. So I think these issues are there. Just if there is any misimpression that was caused, I just wanted to say, because I know that the minister has long given the approval for even the BAT and the, what was the other report, the state duty reports to be completed. I think the issue there was just so we don't put any shackles or so on the committee. We do want them to come, and even when the judge came here, I said, please just say what you want to say. These are issues of public interest, and these are issues that we do need to get out, and often we do differ with the treasury, that's also fine. We should be all big enough, I think, to engage on the issues to come to the right issues. So thank you, Chair.
Three questions that maybe I would like to get some clarity on. The first one is the current approach on potential tax of gold mine or gold mine producers. Now, I'm not sure how are we dealing with the contradictions that are there in that sector, because it's become increasingly expensive in South Africa to continuously dig gold, because it's going deeper and deeper and deeper, and we've declined basically as relatively as a gold producer. Now, I don't know what is the current approach in terms of that, if I can get clarity on that. And the reason why I'm worried about that is because, you know, whether we like it or not, to me, I don't think I think the decline in the gold mine is actually, it impacts negatively on my constituents, first of all, because I think it absorbs a lot of people, and when it sheds jobs, it sheds so many jobs, and that is why I'm very interested in knowing how are we dealing with this issue, you know. And the second one is the recent global financial report that has been released recently, which lists South Africa as the 12th, if I'm not mistaken, biggest exporter of illicit money. Now, in the short term, what are we doing with that? I mean, if you look at South Africa's economy compared to other economies of the world, to me, being listed number 12 is frightening. It is frightening in terms of sustainability going forward, because we have this NDP, and this NDP is not going to be implemented unless we actually have the money. And to me, this is a major risk factor. And that is why I would really love to know what are we doing in the short term, because it does look to me as though we're going to be given also with load shedding. I know we have different perspectives on it, but I can foresee that in my area where I live in, because in Hillcrest, in Devon, where I live, when there is load shedding, there is complete shutdown. Even your Nando's, you know, your depots, there's complete shutdown. No, but it's true. There's complete shutdown during those hours. And to me, that says something about the revenue, because I'm a member of this committee. I'm no longer just looking at Kentucky. I'm no longer looking at Kentucky or looking at Nando's. I'm also looking at where is the money going to be coming from? You know, and I'm just trying to say, what sort of mitigation that we have in respect of that? Because I'm not sure whether this come next year we're gonna be seeing maybe a further decline of corporate tax. And I know Honorable Ross and myself would be very concerned, especially about the personal income tax, because that is also going to even skew the personal income tax, because it's gonna look even much higher. because your company income tax is going to go lower because companies, and because we all know that they would say, someone has said, everybody knows we've been hit by load shedding and therefore our profits have been impacted, you know. But at the same time, to the personal income taxpayer, it's going to be saying, I am subsidizing corporates, you know, and big corporates, and it's going to look unfair. And I think that is also important. And finally, it was this question around the Oxfam report. Oxfam is making a very startling, and I wish you respect, I heard what the judge was saying, but I'm not sure whether it is true or not true, because Oxfam is saying the multinational companies have failed to pay tax of nearly 500 billion of income, and that is like generally in Africa, and they are saying 150 billion in 2010 alone. And I'm saying, is there substance to this, or is this just a dumb suck figure? So that we know what we are dealing with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll do it right now. I'll. Yeah, I'm going there now. Yeah, okay, I'll have another one. Thank you, thank you.
Mining report, as mentioned, it'll be signed off next week and then it'll go to the minister. It's obviously a highly sensitive report, but I mean your point is certainly well taken, that this is, that mining is complicated. It's a massive area of foreign revenue. It's a large employer. This is not a simple sector to work in. But I think it'll be incredibly useful for the mining subcommittee that I'm not on, I'm happy to say, but it's a difficult one, for them to come back and do the committee as soon as the minister makes that report available to you. I think you should do that. In terms of the Oxfam report and about the global financial report and Tobago being the 12th biggest exporter of this money, I'm going to ask either Momo or Kirby to comment on that. Yeah.
Look, I think the judge has touched on it. I think that a lot of these numbers are speculative. So when people say, I think for some of these reports, when people say it with such certainty, it really is problematic. Yes, it's a problem whether we're number 12 or number 50, who knows, maybe that we are more transparent, so some info is available. But again, you know, even we as traders don't know. SARB will be looking at companies, if there's transfer pricing issues. There could be other kinds of issues. But to the extent that the responsible authority on that, of course, money laundering is dealt with by the FIC, you know, perhaps, you know, the SARB is also a player, Financial Surveillance Department, etc. And by the way, on some of these, we even find that there are mistakes. So even there was, in one of the reports, which Chrissy can tell you, where they took the entire taxable income rather than what the tax would have been on their taxable income. So the figure looks big. And, you know, so I think that for us, what the issue is we've been looking at these and saying we should invite these people make these reports, and I think the committee could as well, and certainly have a technical process to engage with them on the the numbers just to see where they're sourcing it from. And then we can check it out. And get academics involved and so on, I think, to look at it. So yeah. So, you know, even we don't have the numbers. So when people raise the numbers, you know, we also look at it, we don't ignore it, we apply our mind to it, and then we start asking questions because you want. The only advice I would say is we need to go to the source of all data and see what's the source, how reliable is it, and then take it from there.
thank you, Chair, and thanks to Felix. I just want to quickly comment on the issue of the numbers. But I think it's a very important issue, as Momo say, raising there. Because during the discussion with various colleagues during the presentation, preparing the report for the Committee for the Joint Sitting on BEST, we would have engaged with various institutions, various colleagues. But what lacked for me, what I found lacking a lot, is lack of coordination between all these institutions. Because I think it's unfortunately it's the figure as it is outrightly without necessary engagement with where does fear come from and how can that process help start or stop if they don't have the figure. Because I attempted to engage one of the institutions which had a figure there. And they said, no, if you have an authentic figure to speed our figure, bring it out there. And I was like, but I think there's a greater need to engage, to coordinate between SARS, and all those institutions to say, where does this figure come from? So I think having a figure there is a scary thing to put out there because it shows the extent, tied to a quantified extent of the problem, which necessitates the need to speed up the measures to mitigate the dealing with the problem. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much all of you for your attendance and constructive contribution. I think this was a very helpful interaction. For the first time it happened and we hope to sustain this and we hope to continue with our engagement on some of the submissions made by the committee. Thanks, the judge, and then your submission. Anything is official, I guess. Yeah. Thank you.